Hello and welcome to Retrieving the Social Sciences, a production of the Center for Social Science Scholarship. I'm your host, Ian Anson, Associate Professor of Political Science here at UMBC. On today's show, as always, we'll be hearing from UMBC faculty, students, visiting speakers, and community partners about the social science research they've been performing in recent times. Qualitative, quantitative, applied, empirical, normative. On Retrieving the Social Sciences, we bring the best of UMBC's social science community to you.
One thing that unites most academics is our love for reading. In fact, one of the weird frustrations of the job of a professor is that we're often so busy researching, teaching, and sometimes even podcasting that we find we don't have much time to engage in this delightful pastime. And no, not all of us spend our evenings curled up on the couch with a relaxing linear algebra textbook. Don't knock it if you haven't tried it, though. Linear algebra is pretty cool. But academics also read, dare I say it, fiction, and nonfiction that isn't directly related to their own fields. I actually have a penchant for sci-fi and speculative fiction, among many other genres. If you want some recommendations, maybe I'll throw a few of them in the show notes. But while professional scholars are understandably enamored with reading, the social context of reading in the general public is a far more complex topic. While we might have some stereotypes in our heads about the nation's bookworms, the social reality, as usual, is far more complex. Take the book talk trend on social media, which has served to overturn assumptions that Gen Z Americans are too preoccupied with their smartphones and video games to pick up something by Nabokov or Jane Austen or Octavia Butler. To better understand the social science of reading for pleasure, it is my pleasure to bring you today's conversation with Dr. Tamara Bala and our very own production assistant, Jean Kim. Dr. Bala is an associate professor and the chair of the Department of American Studies and an affiliate faculty member in the Asian Studies program at UMBC. Her work is focused on the social, cultural, and community-building uses and values of multi-ethnic literatures. Other research interests include Asian American and South Asian American literary and cultural studies, Afro-Asian feminisms, ethnic American reading communities, and literary reception. Her forthcoming book project is all about how social context interacts with reading habits in the American public. Jean has contributed to this work by serving as an undergraduate research assistant, all while doing this very podcast. Impressive work, Jean. I'm delighted to bring you our conversation right now. All right, today we have two wonderful guests to the podcast. One that you're very familiar with if you're a longtime listener to the show. We have Jean Kim here, our wonderful production assistant. And then we also have Dr. Tamara Bala, who is here to join us from the American Studies Department at UMBC. Thanks to both of you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, awesome. So to get started with this topic, which is something that I really have thought about a lot in the weeks and months since we said that we wanted to do this episode, I really want to understand, Dr. Bala, the sort of ideas that led you to begin thinking about this book project in the first place, and sort of how those ideas and inspirations kind of led to the overall product.
Okay, great. No, I love that question. So, so I have always been a reader. Always, like when I was starting from when I was young, I've been the kid who has the flashlight reading, past their bedtime. So reading has always been very important to me. And I got this crazy idea that, hey, why don't I study reading in grad school? So I got a PhD in English. What I didn't know at the time, though, is that most traditional English departments are very interested in literature as an object of study, but they're not actually that interested in reading as a practice, right? That's kind of a more cultural studies question. So I have a PhD in literature, but I was always kind of operating on the fringes of a traditional lit department. And so I landed in American Studies, which is where I am now. And that's kind of been my professional home for a long time. And again, you know, I was really interested in reading as kind of this central question, like the question of how people use literature rather than what literature means or the kind of more interpretive work that a literary scholar does. So my first book was this question of reading. I also, my other kind of field of study is Asian American literature and cultural studies. And I specify within that for South Asian American cultural studies. So I focused in my first book on this massive book club in Washington, D.C. That is organized around South Asian identity and South Asian diasporic literature. And there I was looking at how South Asian readers in the United States use literature as a way to kind of talk about and form a sense of ethnic identity and community identity and belonging. So you can see the sort of cultural studies questions that are beyond just literature. And this project that I'm working on right now is a broad, it kind of widens the scope of that first research. It's still about reading, it's still about race and representation, but it's looking a little bit more expansively at 21st century US literary fiction right now. So yeah, I mean, starts with, I just was always a reader and ended up studying it as many of us do with our favorite topics, so our favorite activities.
Wow. So you can really see why I was so interested in learning about the kind of history of this project and how it evolved, right? And it's super interesting from my perspective as somebody who's got a podcast about the social sciences, because, you know, we're all, at least, you know, in academia, readers, we all like to read for fun, for pleasure, for various reasons. But, you know, this project is really bringing a social scientific angle to the question of what is reading for? What is it about? Right. And you can see how it's quite a different approach than studying rhetoric or studying, you know, literacy, that kind of thing, which, you know, there's probably a lot of research out there that I don't even know about how people learn to read and how people use reading in their lives for functional kinds of tasks. This is much more about what reading means to people. Is that kind of the idea?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's less about interpretation, which is a lot of what lit departments kind of do. I mean, I'm being reductive here, but it's less about kind of close reading, and it's more about, yeah, exactly. Like, how do people use this as an everyday practice of meaning making and shaping their lives? Yeah. And you're right. It does include social science techniques, which, and methods, which I'm happy to talk more about. I am obviously not an expert. Remember, my PhD comes squarely from a humanities field, in which they don't really welcome necessarily interdisciplinary methods all the time. Mm. So I had to learn and am still learning how to incorporate those social science methods.
Absolutely. And that's something that on the podcast, you know, this is an ongoing theme, I think, and Jean can certainly speak to this, is that a lot of folks who have come on the podcast have talked about these disciplinary boundaries and sort of blurring them or kicking them down, and how we might be able to use different techniques for generating knowledge, right, that come across these different fields to build interesting projects that that speak to important stuff for people. I want to talk to Jean as well as we get thinking about this project. Jean, first of all, tell us a little bit about your role in the project, what you've been doing to help support the project, and kind of your take on what this project means to you.
Yeah, so I'm Dr. Bala's research assistant. I've been her research assistant for like the past year, and I've been helping out with kind of like organizational stuff, like helping out with all of like the research documents. Like, we have so many books that I've been like transferring from the library to Dr. Bala's office, and then I help with like her reading notes just to like organize basically everything that's going into the book. We also tried this new like social science software called Zotero, and that was kind of a process. One of my favorite parts of being a research assistant was when we did this, when we researched the book American Dirt. So basically I went through Goodreads, which is like a social media, like a reading social media website. And I basically took down the comments of the book for like 200 users, and we kind of from there used that to like quantitatively like analyze those comments. And a little bit of lore behind the book. It's basically the experience of like a Mexican immigrant to the US, but it was told through the story of like the author was a white woman, basically. So I thought that was really interesting because like learning about that sort of stuff is like something that I would probably do in my free time. Like reading through all the social media comments was really interesting, and it made me think a lot about the question of like who owns knowledge and whether like knowledge is more on like experience or empirical data. Like the author was her basically her argument for being able to write a story like that through immigrant's perspective was because she had done research and she knew about the experience. But I think it was really interesting learning about like the nuanced dynamics of knowledge ownership. And yeah, it's just been really instrumental on my understanding of research ethics. So yeah.
Wow, that's a fascinating account and certainly an interesting example. My mind is kind of reeling thinking about the process of going through all of these comments. And it, you know, it's one of the reasons why also I was so excited about this episode because, you know, I'm an avid Kindle user. You know, I have the Libby app. For those of you who don't know about it, who are listening, it's a great way to patronize your public library and get a lot of free ebooks, which can really fuel that reading habit. But I know that I'm not alone in this. So there's a lot of people out there who are using, you know, Book Talk, right, or social media or Goodreads as well, as kind of this way of learning about new things to read, but also generating these online communities, which have, let's say, maybe sort of eccentric features in some cases. And those online discussions can really be very striking sometimes in terms of their content. And so Dr. Ballas, if you wouldn't mind telling us a bit more about, so is this emblematic of the kind of data collection that you're doing in the book itself? And are you primarily interested in these online communities or other sort of social dynamics within the sort of readership of contemporary literature?
Yeah, I'm so a lot, as you said, a lot of our reading culture right now is happening online. And a lot, so a kind of corollary that I've always been interested in is social forms of reading. So we always think of reading as something that you do alone, right? It has this kind of historical, it's been historically constructed as something that we do alone. But if you think about it, reading is an incredibly social activity. It's shaped by our schools, by libraries, by families. So one of the things I'm interested in looking at in the book too is the kind of social space of reading. And right now, that social space is really happening online on social media. And it was very fun hearing Jean's account of that chapter because she did so much work with me on that chapter. and that chapter is the one where I think I try out my social science chops the most, because, you know, as Jean was saying, we scraped 300 Goodreads reviews. Let me back up, actually. Let me tell you kind of the big question of the chapter, before I start talking about the method. So, as Jean explained, this book, American Dirt, was a very controversial book. It was a Oprah's book club selection in 2020, hit right before the pandemic. And right when it came out, it was, you know, incredibly popular, huge bestseller, but there was very quickly a backlash to this book because it was written by this woman, Jeanine Cummins, who at the time, she started talking about how she had a Puerto Rican grandmother, but previously had identified as white. So people kind of picked up on this strategic identification that she was doing to make this book about Central American migration seem more authentic. And there was this huge backlash where Latinx writers were saying, you know, we're elevating these stories by white authors and at the expense of elevating Latinx voices. So we knew all the reasons that this book was something that people didn't like, but what I was interested in is why was this book so incredibly influential in terms of being a bestseller? Aside from just Oprah, it stayed on the bestseller list and it still sells very well. So I wanted to know why do people love this book? And that was where Goodreads came in. So Jean scraped, you actually undersold Jean. You scraped 300 Goodreads reviews. I sorted them by the most popular because I thought those would be the most representative. And thank you, Goodreads, for having these kinds of filters. And it all has to be done by hand because Goodreads does not allow for any kind of automated capturing, whereas there's other kind of online sites where you can do that. So Jean went through, scraped as much data as she could about each of these individual entries, and then we coded that data. And we used a software called Deduce, which is a little bit more user-friendly than NVivo, which I was not going to learn how to use. And I will tell you, I hired an expert in this to help me with the coding, which I think is the responsible thing to do since that was the a deeper kind of qualitative research than I think I have the expertise for. And then I analyzed that coded data. So what we found is that readers who were primarily white women really identified with the plight of the author and the fact that the author, as a white woman, was being maligned and kind of criticized for telling this story. Readers, though, what I found in kind of the coincidence of codes is that readers really strongly identified with Jeanine Cummins and her hopes and sort of like this narrative of wanting to empathize with marginalized others. So that in that way, it is emblematic. I can talk a little bit more about the bigger stakes of the project, but that chapter, I would say, has the kind of most intense social science methods. But I do think for this kind of social media research, those methods are really, I think you can't really do it without because it's so much data, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it really speaks to just the difficulties and some of the inherent challenges of trying to grasp the just kind of fire hose of content that's out there. And I definitely think it's an interesting strategy to try to hone in on specific books or specific conversations about books that have are these flashpoints or that create these specific case studies. And to your point on NVivo and about Deduce and all this stuff, for sure, right? I think another common theme that's emerged on this podcast is that doing this kind of research is incredibly difficult. I think that it's refreshing to hear this idea that like, yeah, we can collaborate with people who are methods experts on some of this stuff and not feel, oh no, we're not doing it ourselves, and that's somehow not off limits or something. That's something that we've heard over and over as well, is that partnership like this, and maybe it's through some sort of paid consultancy, or maybe it's through co-authorship, right, is a really, really great way to sort of reach some of those conclusions without having to feel like you have to go through intensive methods training when you're already midstream in a project. You've got to do, 100 other things. So that's absolutely refreshing, and definitely, I think an important takeaway for any of our listeners who are thinking about starting a project on which they have some expertise, but then also there's methodological considerations that are beyond the scope of what they've done before. Definitely, an important part of the social sciences today is those forms of collaboration. So,
I love hearing about that just because as an aside, this person who she was a consultant, she helped me code, come up, set up the codes for this data set. And she and I are gonna collaborate now using that data set. So out of this kind of like paid partnership and collaboration, we're gonna we feel like we collected so much information, we're gonna co-author something. So I think.
Love it. Yeah, that's music to my ears, right? These kinds of collaborations, that's exactly the kind of thing that gets me so excited when I think about the research and just ongoing projects. And on that note, I thought maybe it might be nice to hear from both of you about kind of the biggest takeaways maybe from this project that you've reached thus far, right? Kind of the biggest things that have stood out to you as the most impactful findings. Maybe we'll start with Jean. We'll maybe hear a little bit about what Jean thinks about the most impactful or important ideas that she's taken away from this experience.
Yeah, I love to read, but learning about contemporary readership is like not something that I really knew much about going into this research position. So I was a little hesitant, honestly, to even apply for the position. So I think one of my biggest takeaways from just being a research assistant, I guess this doesn't really have to do with like the whole big picture thing we're talking about, but as from a research research assistant perspective, for any students who might want to try branching out, learning more about social science scholarship and like learning how to conduct research and partnering with professors, like definitely just try it out, reach out, apply for those opportunities. I've definitely learned a lot from what I've done with Dr. Bala, so yeah.
Well, I could not have made this kind of progress without your help. And I feel like you're the social scientist between the two of us. So it's been really nice having your support. And that was another nice thing about the deduce training is Jean was able to come to the trainings with me to learn a little bit more. And I was happy to have her there because then I could knew I could be like, okay, let's tackle this too. Like if we need to, let's tackle this together. Have another set of ears. So I suppose I never, so the larger project is called Decentering Whiteness in Contemporary US Literature. And it's a working title, but the overarching argument is that we've really looked at how publishing, there's been a lot of pressure on publishing to diversify in recent years, to think more about the voices that it elevates. We have not looked, though, at how we mediate reading in different public sites, to also incorporate those questions of diversity. And I look at different sites in which we've actually really centered the taste of white women readers in particular, who have always been the largest reading public in the United States, for reasons that, historical reasons, much of which is that literacy was denied to others, but also because white women in even starting in the 19th century would use reading for different types of political ends. So I'm looking at celebrity book clubs, at social media, and at this current wave of book bans to examine how white women's desires and needs from reading are what we've been kind of centering, and we need to disrupt that if we actually ever want to diversify our literary cultures. Yeah, so that's kind of that's the big stake of the book. Right now I'm working on the book bans chapter and looking at this organization called Moms for Liberty and how they've been driving a lot of the book bans. And his argument is really bearing out in all of these different sites. And yeah, it just has me looking at how some of the values that we bring to reading, like empathy, are values that in ways also need to be examined and disrupted because empathy is an emotion that we think of as like this very positive thing. But if you think about empathy, it's actually a very hierarchical emotion. You don't feel empathy necessarily for folks who you feel are more fortunate. So anyways, getting into some of the weeds of the project, but yeah, that's kind of the big picture of what I'm looking at, these different sites. In the last chapter, I hope to look at sites like online Black reading communities and youth reading culture to look at sites where we are actually doing the work to decenter whiteness and normative styles of reading.
Wow, this is such an interesting idea, and just has got my mind reeling thinking about all of the applications of this and the consequences for your findings for kind of broadcasting this to the broader kind of reading community, and especially to think about inclusion in reading communities and how that might play out in the future. So there's real stakes behind this project, and I really look forward to hopefully seeing it. Come out in the near future and make an impact. And it's also got to be kind of fun for you because it's also meta, because people potentially will be reading this book, and it's a book about reading books. So I love a good meta narrative. I mean, I think that's really cool to think about, getting together maybe as a scholarly book club at some point and reading this book and gleaning some insights from it. Yeah, really fascinating stuff. And I was really heartened also to think about all the kind of diversity of different methods and approaches that you're bringing to these various topics and chapters. So yeah, Congratulations on the work that you've done thus far. And again, we really look forward to seeing the progress that you're going to make in the near future. Before we let you go, I just have a quick question that I wanted to ask of both of you. This is a question that I ask of just about every interviewee, every guest that comes on the podcast. Although I guess, Jean, I'm not sure that qualifying you as a guest is necessarily the right designation, given obviously your incredible and longstanding work on the podcast itself. But I always ask my guests if they have any advice for student listeners who might be listening in, who might be interested in developing skills or in becoming sort of a pro in the social sciences and in terms of, creating research like this. So what advice might you give to student listeners in just a couple of minutes?
Well, I loved Jean's advice of just, looking for these opportunities and applying, even if you don't feel like you have expertise in the area. The other thing I always try to think about a lot, especially if you're trying to think in a more interdisciplinary way, or you want to, try a new kind of method or skill that you're not used to, is I try to always focus on like the object of study. So like, what is the thing I want to know more about? So like in my case, it was reading. It wasn't literature. It was how people read. And then what are the different tools that I need to study that, to figure that out, and to kind of get at those questions. So I like to start, that's how I start like research projects. I tell students that, even in sort of senior seminar classes and capstone research projects, start with just like, what is your object of study? And that's going to tell you what the methods are that you need.
So I kind of already touched on that, touched on this question before. But yeah, just trying to put your just explore different things. I didn't think I really had any expertise in this sort of field, but it really did connect to like a lot of the overarching things that I'm like really interested in. For example, like I'm really interested in the Korean diaspora community, and I feel like I learned a lot, especially learning about like different readership communities in America. So yeah, just try branching out. There, a lot of things are a lot more interdisciplinary than you might think, so you will probably learn a lot.
Yeah, I like that, Jean. It's like go down the rabbit holes. Just go down the rabbit holes. Sometimes they'll lead you to good places. That's what I've been trying to do with this project.
Well said to both of you. And I will say that when I get to go down the rabbit hole with my wonderful podcast guests, I learn a lot too. And it's been wonderful to be able to branch out in my knowledge as well and to learn a bit about the social science of reading and how this all works in the contemporary context, especially given sort of our racial and racialized history and ongoing issues related to that. So thank you again so much for taking the time to talk to me today, Jean. Thank you again for your ongoing work on the podcast. And Dr. Bala, thanks again for being here.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It was great talking.
Thank you.
I hope that you enjoyed thinking about the social science of reading. And as you settle in to turn off your podcasting device and pick up your next summer read, I hope you'll remember to keep questioning. Retrieving the Social Sciences is a production of the UMBC Center for Social Science Scholarship. Our director is Dr. Christine Mallinson. Our associate director is Dr. Felipe Filomeno. And our undergraduate production assistant is Jean Kim. Our theme music was composed and recorded by Dewan Moreland. Find out more about CS3 at socialscience.umbc.edu. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, where you can find full video recordings of recent CS3-sponsored events. Until next time, keep questioning.